Support for WYPR comes from University of Maryland Medical System, committed to advancing the health of Maryland through academic medicine. With locations across the state, care is delivered close to home. Learn more at ummms.org.
It was a co-op. They were really weird.
One might ask, how did I get here? And this was what I asked myself many times.
Are you going to Scarborough Fair?
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. I'm Jessica Hankin.
And I'm Laura Wexler.
And this week on the podcast, Odd Couples, three stories about eccentric college roommates. As I was putting this one together, I was like, I think I have a child that is on the precipice. Is that how you would say it?
Yes.
Of college and figuring out where to go. And I have all this like anxiety about like, how is she going to be as a roommate?
Yeah.
And so all three of I found all of these to be very, well, resonant with my life and also just entertaining stories on their own merit. So this first story is from Sarah Killen. She told us at Too Close for Comfort, a show that we had. It was an all audience show. So Sarah just showed up and shared this very funny tale about her experience as a college student at Tufts.
So my freshman year of college, I had a roommate that was an absolute terror. And this story is not about her. But at the end of freshman year, I figured out that all of my roommates or all of my friends in this like around my roommate in this like freshman year group that we had formed were like trashy, shallow bitches. And I was like, these are not my people. They're horrible. And so somebody can relate to that, I think. I did like a control alt delete on everyone I knew in college. And I came back sophomore year and like emptied my contacts and started over. And so I needed a place to live because I was supposed to live with these people again. And my friend Will, who I knew from like activist circles, was like, oh, Crafts House is looking for another person. And we really need someone to move in. Otherwise Tufts will put the college will put a stranger in there. And I was like, do you like living there? Because what I knew about Crafts House was it was a co-op. They were really weird, and that they put drugs in your drinks when you went there for parties. Those were like the rumors. And so he was like, yeah, I like living there. There's like this one weird thing. They use like too much garlic in the food. And I was like, okay, I don't care about that. So I moved in, and I was really lost. Like, I didn't have a lot of friends. I didn't know where I was going, and I wasn't, like, nearly weird enough to live in this house. Like, I was far too normal, and I was like, I'm never going to fit in, and this is going to suck, because it's a co-op, and you have no personal space, and you're required to do these work shifts and these dumpster diving shifts, and you have to be, like, I'm not kidding. You have to be, like, really close to these people, and, like, you know, your space isn't really your space, and you might come home to your bed, and a stranger would be in it, so, you know, I was like, I'm never going to fit in here. They all did, like, a lot of casual coke. Like, they did, like, ketamine because it was a Tuesday. And I actually was completely sober that semester because I had a lung infection and I couldn't even drink alcohol. I was an activist, but, like, they were all, like, the artsy activist type. And I, like, wasn't, like, a cool one. I didn't, like, get arrested. And they all did the arrestable actions. That's, like, another story. For a lot of other reasons, I feel like I didn't fit in. We were about to plan our first party of the semester, and we had had a cockroach problem in the third floor bathroom. And so we were like, we can't get rid of them. Like, these cockroaches will never leave. Like, they would survive the apocalypse. Like, how do we get rid of them? We were talking about our party at the same time. We were like, what if we do like a cockroach dystopia theme? And I was like, this is so weird. And then there was like this fierce debate where half of the house wanted to buy like live bait like hundreds of cockroaches and hang them from little tiny cages in the ceiling. And the other half of the house was like, we already have some. Like, why don't we just use those? And so eventually we went online and we bought like hundreds of rubber cockroaches and we glued them everywhere, all over the house. And we made some like giant paper mache cockroaches, and I had fun with that. And then we got orange juice screwdrivers as our like screwdrivers were our like our mixers at the party, and so we put one in the bottom of everyone's drinks so that they and we didn't drug people, we just put cockroaches in the bottom. In fact, we did the opposite of drug people. We hung bread from the ceilings that we had dumpster dived so that people would eat while they were at parties so they wouldn't get really drunk. So yeah, it was nice. Like if you wanted the drugs we would give them to you, but if you didn't you could eat the bread. There was all this like lead up, and I was like, "This party is like not gonna make any sense." Like, I'm like, none of these people are my kind of people. And it turns out, like, long story short, it was the most fun. I discovered that the guy who lived behind me was actually our campus biggest drug dealer, but he didn't offer me any cocaine, and that was fine because I didn't want it. Like I was completely sober, and no one pressured me, and everyone complimented my giant paper mache cockroach, and I found a place that loved me even though I was the most normal one, and I was able to start over with my friends, and not have to live with the trashy bitches for all of college.
I think there were many lines about this in this story that I loved, but my favorite was when she said that she had, you know, one of her assignments in her co-op was to dumpster dive. Like that was an obligation that they had to sign up for.
Yeah, so. I that checks out.
Okay, so our next storyteller is actually a theater teacher, a longtime theater teacher at the Park School, which, full disclosure, both my kids go to, and they both had Gina Braden as a teacher, and they both really loved her. So this is Gina's story about being a student at Washington College in Maryland on the Eastern Shore. Take a listen.
This is about the time when I lived in this ramshackled, beautiful, falling down country house on the Eastern Shore of Maryland with the following roommates. My much older fiance, my best friend from college, Esther, a gigantic black snake that no one else but me ever saw hanging above the driveway, and they would laugh at me and I would run into the house so it wouldn't drop on my head. A 10,000-year-old cat that came with the place called Patches that I was terrified was going to catch on fire under the wood stove and burn the place to the ground and hated us. A new little puppy. Oh, Sadie. Moment of pause for Sadie, dear heart. And a 4-year-old boy, a bear, and somebody called the Blood Witch. Yeah, what? Exactly. One might ask, how did I get here? And this was what I asked myself many times. The story of how I met all these people is a little too long for the moment, except for my friend Esther, who I met as a 17-year-old little girl going to Washington College on a giant poetry scholarship. And I was thrilled to go and live on this writer's hall where, as Walt Whitman would say, we all had multitudes inside of us. I hold multitudes because, you know, my little suburban Catholic family did not see my brilliance in my writing, and I just knew that living with artists and poets and writers, that would be the case. My first roommate wore a tight black miniskirt and smoked and always had boys in the room, and so I spent all the time in the lounge sleeping on the couch, and then I met Esther, and we met in a creative writing class. She was from Philly and lived in the city and was Jewish, and her family was activists. And I was from Texas and Catholic, and my family didn't answer the phone unless their hair was good. So, but we formed a perfect alliance, and we read poetry together outside. And Esther was just fabulous, right? She saw the multitudes in me. I saw the multitudes in her. We were a weird little couple who ran around singing songs together. But she also had a really hard life. Her mother was diagnosed with cancer our freshman year, and she actually went home to Philly because her mom had contacted the Hemlock Society and said, I really don't want to put you guys through this. We're just going to do this as a family together. She showed up back on Monday going, well, that didn't work, because her mother was playing cards, kept waking up after each injection, and beat them at every card game. So Esther came from this fierce, beautiful, intense, intellectual family, so different from my own, and I was intimidated by them and her and also loved them. She had had a hard life, and over time, things became harder for her. Going to class became more of an issue. Things became more of an issue. But she got me a job after I graduated at this marvelous Pine Woods folk dance camp where I was a cook, promising me I would get a theater job from the people there. And I did. Somebody from the New Theater Brooklyn worked there, and I went off to New York, and Esther picked me up when the job was done. And this is the first time Esther kept a secret from me. She knew my boyfriend was going to propose to me, and she told me later that it was so hard for her to keep this secret from me because we shared everything. Flash forward a few years. I was engaged. I had busted up my knee working at a school here and needed to recover and moved back to the Eastern Shore, and we all lived in this house together. And Esther was going to make my wedding dress because I had discovered that there were all these beautiful overgrown gardens outside this house. And that was part of my recovery. There was a statue here. And we were like, okay, fine. We'll just get married here. But Esther was suddenly not coming out of her room. And there would be weird smells coming out sometimes. Bags of salt and vinegar potato chips. Big things, liters of Coke, cartons of cigarette. That was kind of the diet Esther was on at the time. And I was getting more and more nervous because I just didn't know how to confront the fact that, like, we weren't making the dress together. What was going on? And one very stormy night, we were sitting there with the cat throwing up and the dog shaking, and there's a big storm outside. And my fiancé tells me that Esther has told him that she's just been diagnosed with multiple personality disorder. And I was upset for her, but also selfishly for me, because she hadn't told me this. And she was my best friend. We talked about it a little bit the next day, and Esther said, oh, no, I was going to tell you, because I've been writing, and these are my personalities. There's a boy, and there's a bear, and there's the blood witch. And I thought, who's going to make the wedding dress? Because the bear, that's not going to be good. The boy, that's going to, like, reveal things. The blood witch, that would probably be an awesome wedding dress, but my family's not going to like that. And it was still really awkward. And we're sitting there at a table with the storm going one night, X and I, and the rain is pelting down, and I suddenly got really nervous. We're half a mile away from the nearest neighbor. Nobody's around. And I said to my fiancé, drinking tequila, by the way, have we thought of what we'll do if the blood witch comes out? And we laughed Sicily, and then silence and drank the tequila and never talked about it again. So I know it feels really dark right now, but the storm the next morning, there was this wonderful thing that happened. I looked outside under the tree where the snake usually hung out that nobody believed me about, and there was this giant, pool blow-up thing, right? Like, it was pink and white polka dotted, and it was floating in the middle of the driveway where the storm had made a big puddle. And it was ridiculous. Where had this gigantic floaty come from? Had the storm picked it up and put there? And Esther was just driving up with cigarettes and Coke. And we both ran out and started laughing hysterically. And it was like the past. And we were also like, oh, my gosh, do we, like, drive around and find out which little kid lost this? They're probably losing this. And we started to talk about everything. Here's what happened. We laughed. Everything was absurd. We laughed. She said, your fears are unfounded. The wedding dress happened. The wedding was beautiful. Three couples got engaged there. It was awesome. Esther danced. Fast forward. She's doing beautifully now. She got a good diagnosis. That was all crap. That was apparently, if you read up, something that was happening a lot at the time. Thank you. Okay, and here's what I want to say. We all hold multitudes. Esther saw my multitudes. I saw hers. The whimsy and fun and joy we shared allowed us to finally come together around that. And I would just say, as we're older and we live with people, sometimes we cease to see the multitudes in one another. So I would encourage you to look at the people you live with, see the multitudes in them, have them share the multitudes with you, and just express all those parts of yourself, except maybe not the blood witch. Give her some tequila and a bag of chips, and she'll hang out in the attic, and it'll all be fine, I promise. Thank you for letting me.
That's such a layered story. It has like a Tommy gun delivery, so you have to really, you almost want to listen to it again because how quickly she takes you through that journey. But multiple personalities. That's not a thing you hear about anymore, right?
No, and this is making me remember. I had an intern here at a magazine in Baltimore who was a college student, and she kept getting sick. Like, just kept getting intestinal trouble. And she came to find out that her roommate, with whom she did not get along, was taking her toothbrush and wiping it around the toilet. And then, oh, I'm sorry. Is this scaring you?
I just want to remind everyone that this episode was because of my child about to go to college.
I just feel like that only happens once, really.
Oh, my God.
Because, you know, today's kids, they don't have these kind of mental health issues. So.
Yeah, no, they're great. They're
in
they're
such
so, good shape.
They are really mentally healthy. Okay.
Let's take a short break before our next story. Okay, so this final story of eccentric college roommates comes from Matt Fisher, who told the story many years ago.
And about, is himself eccentric.
Oh, my word, is he ever. I just saw him. He came to our holiday party, and he was... he had a dog walking business for a long time, and now he's just... he's like the...
Girl Friday.
The Girl Friday of a very wealthy woman. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So Matt
odd,
Fisher.
Odd couples.
Oh, yeah.
To the end.
Yeah, he's got to tell that story sometime. Anyway, so Matt Fisher, this is his story of his freshman year at Loyola in Baltimore. Take a listen.
So when Jessica and Laura first asked me to do this show, my immediate response was, I have to talk about a friend of mine walking in on my roommate masturbating. But then I decided I should talk about the same-sex common law marriage I'm involved in after living with the same guy for 13 years, but I don't want to embarrass my fiance. So I've decided to talk about Bob. We're going to talk about Bob. We all agree Bob is a fairly common name, but he's also a very unique individual. But before I get to Bob, I want to do a little background. I know some of you are familiar with Westminster, Maryland, but if you're not, it's a quaint little town. At least the town itself is a quaint little town. The surrounding area is sort of like a booming metropolis of what used to be farms and woods, and now it's just rows of cookie-cutter houses and perfectly landscaped yards and things like that. But the town itself is really... I can't see any of you, by the way. The town itself has really maintained its character, and it has streets lined with big oak trees and sycamores and maples and old Victorian-style houses, and it's just a great place to grow up, so... This is where I grew up, and I was pretty well known around town because I was always cruising town on my bike and had an older brother and an older sister, and everyone knew them. So I had a very comfortable childhood. It was nice. But speaking of my older brother and older sister, I really looked up to them, and when it came time to go to college, I wanted to go to the same college that they both went to, which was Loyola College, which is also where my father, grandfather, two aunts, and an uncle went. So I pretty much was destined to go there, obviously. And to me, there was no other college, but I had certain expectations of what it would be like. You know, even in high school, I was wearing my Loyola sweatshirt and, you know, running around trying to be academic and, you know, I wanted to go to school and study and learn and, you know, meet people with the same interests that I had and, you know, chase after cute girls from New York and New Jersey because that's where all the girls are from at Loyola. And, just have a good time. You know, so finally, I got my application. I was filling it out. And there's one question I remember in particular because it got me one step closer to Bob. Don't forget we're talking about Bob here. The question was, do you want a smoking room or a non-smoking room? Now, I wasn't a smoker, but I knew if I wanted to really meet the cool people at college, I had to choose smoking, okay? So, of course, I checked off smoking, which was the right thing to do to get closer to Bob. Or maybe it wasn't. I don't know. But, you know, we got our room assignments, and I found out I would be living with three other guys. Two of them were already friends from high school and down in the Gaithersburg area, and we all started to chat on the phone and, you know, get to know each other. And, you know, they were nice guys, pretty much what I expected, what I was looking for. And, you know, we all discussed different aspects of our life, but no one had spoken to Bob. We kept asking, has anyone talked to Bob? No one's talked to Bob. Where's Bob? Who is Bob? So eventually the first day of school comes and we all show up and I get there first just to see what it's like. And what it's like is a room the size of this stage with two sets of bunk beds. So I was like, all right, tight fit. So I get there first and I kind of separate the beds and try to jam myself in the corner for some privacy, which found out later, forget it. I don't know why I even tried. And my other two roommates showed up and we all got to know each other and we met our parents and just had a good time. We got there at like noon. It got to be 6, 7 o'clock, and the sun's starting to set, and we're like, you know what? I'm tired of being pent up in this room unpacking. We need to get out on campus and check out all these girls from New York and New Jersey. You know what I'm saying? So we were like, you know what? Maybe Bob will be here when we get back. So, you know, we cruised up to campus, you know, had a little dinner. It's pretty good food there, by the way. And, you know, we go back to the room, and I'm the first to walk in. I open the door, and there's still no Bob. It's completely dark, but... What's that smell? It smells like cigarettes. And my eyes kind of adjust, and there's a street lights, you know, in the background, and my eyes kind of adjust, and I see this figure of this head and these feet propped up on the desk, and then I see the orange glow of a cigarette. I'm like, holy shit, there's Bob, and he is so cool. So... I flick on the light, and there's Bob leaning back in his chair, feet propped up on his desk, big smile on his face, smoking his cigarette. He's got his baggy jeans, his black leather jacket, and his thick head of awesome black hair slicked back that I was so envious of, I couldn't even stand it. And he had this little, this glimmer in his eye that you just knew he was cool, you know? So that was my first introduction to Bob. And as the weeks went on, I got to know Bob a little bit more. He was really into gangster rap. And he was from a small, sort of depressed, from what I know of it, I've never been there, a small, sort of depressed suburb of Pittsburgh called Aliquippa that he referred to as the Quip. And he loved smoking weed, okay? Mainly blunts. If you don't know what a blunt is, it's when you cut open a cigar, empty it out, fill it with weed, roll it up, lick it, and smoke it. And these are real stinky things, especially in a room the size of the stage with a door towel so the smell wouldn't get out, okay? So eventually, you know, this continues for a few weeks, maybe months, you know, while we're trying to study about, oh, yeah. So eventually Bob runs out of weed, and he has to find a new dealer. So I come home from class one day, and his new dealer is there, and his new dealer, it turns out, is named Killa. So I come home from class. I'm coming up in the elevator. Oh, Bob's at it again. Walk into my room, the size of the stage... bunk beds, Bob, 8 or 9 boys, all with their own blunts, just smoking so thick you couldn't see through it. Now, this was very exciting and terrifying. It was exciting because in high school I had seen this kind of thing on MTV Raps. But it was terrifying because I was worried that if I gave one of Killer's boys the wrong look, I didn't know what was going to happen to me. But anyway, you know, he continued to get his weed from Killer. But then all of a sudden, one day he decided to just skip class and, you know, smoke a blunt and play some video games, you know. So we're like, all right, so he does that. He does, you know, and then a week goes by, he's still skipping class. And then he decides, you know what? Why should I have to wear pants? Bob took off his pants. He stopped wearing pants. I guess, why should he have to wear pants? I have no idea what was going through his head at that time, but I know one of the thoughts was, why should I have to wear pants, okay? So Bob, you know, Bob spent 3 weeks sitting around in his tidy whities and a tennis camp t-shirt he borrowed from me that was 2 sizes too small with his gut hanging out, playing video games, and that shine in his eye, that cool shine he had the first day I met him, had turned into a crazy shine. And I officially knew he was crazy the day that I came home from class and Bob was sitting on the corner of his desk. He had his headphones on. He was bobbing. He was bobbing. He was jamming. He was feeling good. He looks at me. He's like, yo, this shit is dope. I'm like, cool. You know, I thought it was like a new record, you know. He's bobbing. He's bobbing. He's bobbing. And then I lay down on my bed and all of a sudden I kind of hear him mumbling the lyrics and just, are you going to Scarborough Fair? Parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme. So at that point, I knew that he had officially lost it, okay? And that's, at around that same time, the 3 weeks of not going to class caught up with him. He ended up getting kicked out, but the thing I learned from Bob is to expect the unexpected and be open for the unexpected, and that's true.
Imagine if, so, you know, now when you fill out a college application for your roommates, once you accept.
They ask you if you, like, stay up late or, right?
Yeah. If you're messy. If you're messy, if you stay up late. And then, so in this story, I love when Matt was like, I intentionally clicked that I wanted to have a roommate that was a smoker because I knew those were the cool people, even though Matt did not smoke at all. So, and I, can you imagine,
That's
like,
amazing.
Doing something like that?
Yeah.
I mean, I would have clicked smoker because I was 100% a smoker, but we didn't get that option. But
I lived in the honors dorm.
Oh, you didn't smoke? Did anyone smoke in the honors dorm?
No.
Really?
No. There were people who never came out of their rooms, though. People who were needed vitamin D really badly because they were.
Imagine that.
Yeah. It was, a thing. But anyway, these are all great. I love just the happenstance of people getting placed together. It's going to go great.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be really good. Yeah. Shay, you're going to be fine.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to our episode this week. If you visit stoopstorytelling.com, you can listen to a lot of stories there and find out about upcoming shows. We want to thank Maureen Harvey for producing the podcast, and we will be back soon with more stories from the Stoop.